everybody. Welcome to the Nerdy Times. Not with me today is Dan in person. He is with me via Skype. Say hello, Dan.
Hello, Dan.
Oh, life is so busy for us right now. It is impossible for us to get together with a microphone, sit down, and talk. So now we have to do it via Skype.
That's right. Technology is going to save us.
Yes. And very soon we can bring Joe in on it and Tina Sabi and whoever else wants to join in via Skype. We could just make it a giant Skype bukkake party.
Skype fest.
And that's right. It'll be great. Lots of things have happened. I think the last time we were on, we talked about the Comic-Con that was in St. Louis.
Right before Comic-Con.
And we went there, and it was a great show. There was a lot of fun stuff that was there. Autograph lines were incredible. They were a gauntlet to be endured. When you have nearly half the cast of Firefly, and then you have like B movie legends like Bruce Campbell, you're going to be standing in line a long time. So I think my feet have finally recovered the standing, but it was well worth it. I got my Serenity poster signed, which was pretty cool. Dan got all his Firefly cards signed.
Yes, I did.
From the Firefly game. So that was pretty cool. And they were all pretty nice people to meet, I would say.
Yep, I would too. I really, you know, it's like I really enjoyed that they brought a lot. They brought more celebrities and I think a higher level of celebrities. You know, we had William Shatner, Nathan Fillion was, you know, and then Adam Baldwin was added to like the last second.
Yeah, that was kind of big surprise. But yeah, they all. I didn't have any like bad celebrity moments that I can think of. I mean, they all were very personable, and even like Nathan Fillion, who had an incredible, as you would expect, he got your name as you came up. He talked to you as he was signing the autograph, you know, and he kind of made the short experience that you had with him as much as it could be, you know, shook everybody's hand, was really good. I think it was the only one of us that met Bruce Campbell because I had the VIP for that. And his experience was really nice because you were the only one up there with him. The table was completely clear. He didn't have any assistants or anybody up there with him, no photos or anything. You waited at a queue at one end of the table. He was at the very other end, and you walked down, and it was just you and Bruce Campbell. As he signed your autograph, you could talk to him for a minute. And I did ask him about something that one of the previous interviews we had with some of the people from Evil Dead had mentioned. I can't remember his last name. He played the blacksmith in Army of Darkness. He was a childhood friend of Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi, and he had said that in Army of Darkness, that before the scene where they filmed Bruce Campbell doing good Ash, bad Ash, and you know beating himself up, he said that Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell had gotten into an argument in the trailer about like Universal Studios and how everybody liked him and nobody liked Sam Raimi, and it was just this big thing. And so when he came out and he did that scene, he was actually kind of making fun of Sam Raimi at that point. Mm-hmm. Sam Raimi was just like, okay, print it, you know, and just moved on, you know, didn't care. So the guy told me, he goes, if you ever get a chance to meet Bruce Campbell, you got to ask him about, you know, that story. So I was like, yeah, that'll happen. Sure. So then I got up to the table and I was going to just ask if, he, you know, during his Q&A, if I were to bring up the question, would he answer it? And he said, well, what's the story that you've heard? And I said, well, Tim said that it was you and Sam Raimi had a fight beforehand. And then you were kind of, you know, poking fun during the performance. And he's like, I think Tim's full of shit. Take that for what you will. Maybe Bruce doesn't want to talk about it. Maybe Tim is full of shit. Who knows? You know, it's just one of those things that you'll never know because you're not Bruce Campbell and you're not Tim and you're not you were not on the set of Army of Darkness, so you have no clue.
It's a he said.
Yeah, it is a mystery for the ages. So there you go. What about you, Dan? What do you got from Comic-Con?
I got my card signed. I bought some art. And, you know, now that I mentioned that, I should have got the artist's name here sitting with me, but I will put it in the show notes. But it was really cool. I really like the vintage travel poster look, and this guy had that sort of, you know, the illustrated look going, and he had like a Futurama poster where it's like Welcome to the Future, and then he had a couple of like a set of three Star Wars prints that was like, you know, like the shuttle heading up to the Death Star, and then like the Death Star over Endor, and then the cloud, like the Millennium Falcon heading to Cloud City, all in a similar style. So I bought those, you know, those three as like a set. So yeah, I got that. And then, you know, just in general, it's like, yeah, my Nathan Philly experience, you know, when I waited until the very end to try to get his autograph, just because of when I got there and different, you know, things that happened. And it's like, and this is sort of like a double-edged comment, because like on the one hand, it's like it was very, very brief. But on the other hand, they were making every possible effort to get everyone through the line. It's like, you know,
right.
It was like the last signing window on Sunday. There was, you know, not a ridiculous line, but a decent sized line. And Nathan Fillion, it was like after the Serenity panel Q&A. And it was like he apparently had a flight to hit. And it's like he, you know, Nathan Fillion and his handlers were making every possible like accommodation to get people through. Like, you know, it's like they really, and there was like a bunch of us in line that were like, we need to get the autograph. You know, we need it for our set. And it's like, you know, so like, yeah, that I will say, even though it was a very brief meeting, it was, they were like jumping, you know, over, you know, obstacles to get us through, you know, just make sure everyone had a chance.
He was also under the weather that weekend too.
I know. He was horribly sick.
Yeah. And I mean, but the guy was completely, you know, mm-hmm. completely.
Oh, yeah. He was a trooper and a professional.
Yeah. So, you know, I have to say that, you know, but like all the cast members were great. I mean, even poor Ralph Macchio, who was there, the by far the most unvisited celebrity in the entire con. I mean, on Saturday when it was completely packed, the only person at his table was the handler and him. And I walked up and I said, hey, I just wanted to say hi. Is that cool? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he comes up and we talked for a minute or so. And then, you know, he's like, hey, join the con, you know. You know, it was just, I felt so bad for
it. Oh, no. Yeah.
But it was really, you know, there's so many things going on.
Yeah. And I will say just about the con in general, it's like, I love that they moved it inside the dome. Because if anyone doesn't know, like the St. Louis Convention Center is part of the Edward Jones Dome where the football Rams play. And so they moved the whole convention center this year inside the dome area. So it was in like on the field, and they had some of the seats pushed back. And then they had like the tunnel between that and one of the other. And like they had one big hall set up as like registration, photo ops, food area, just general, you know, everything in there. And then there was a tunnel with more food, and then everything inside the dome. It was like it was probably double or triple the space they had last year. Easily.
Yeah. Because the ticket area in where the food was, mm-hmm. was the entire con last year.
Exactly. Yeah.
They didn't have that little tunnel area. They didn't have any of the stadium area, you know, and I think they were only utilizing part of the number of halls that they had for the different panels and stuff. But this year it was just massive.
Yeah, and it's like, and, you know, and the other thing I really liked is like a difference from this year from last year is the parking this year was a lot cheaper. I know, Corey, you didn't really have to park. You had a hotel nearby. But it was like parking was by the hour, and then there was a limit to the day. So in previous year and for other events at the dome, you would go into the dome parking garage, the one that's right by the dome. And there would be someone standing there, and it would be, you know, 15 or 20 bucks to park for the day. And it's like now, because you're paying by the hour, even if you're there for 10 hours, it was only, and it was like $1 an hour. So it's like for Friday, instead of having to pay 10 bucks to park for 2 hours, it was like, you know, I got in and out like for a couple bucks. Saturday, it only cost me $9 to park, and Sunday, it cost me $5. It's like the whole weekend cost me, but like one day on Saturday would have cost the previous year. So I really appreciated them not gouging the parking price.
Yeah, and I also think that, and I could be completely wrong, but even the food this year was not ridiculously overpriced.
Yeah.
As it, because we came last year and it was like, I think it was $6 or $7 for a slice of pizza or something, and it was like $4 or $5 for a bottle of water. And I think I bought a bottle of water this year for $2 and a slice of pizza for $4.50 or $5 or something like that. It wasn't, you know, it was a little different. I mean, you expect to kind of, you know, you're going to pay through the nose on some stadium, of that stuff.
But, stadium prices, you know.
Right. But, you know, they had more food than I expected them to have. They had a couple of, you know, they had pulled pork sandwiches and all sorts of kind of crazy stuff in there. It was pretty wild.
Well, it's one of those things once your event goes from, like, because I think the first year they did Comic-Con, you know, they were really trying to test the waters. They were doing everything on the cheap. Now this year they knew they had like a built-in audience. So
right.
They were willing to spend or to get, guarantee a little more money to get a higher quality, you know, vendor in there.
Yeah, I think next year it's going to be the same thing.
Bigger and better.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy. I'd be surprised if it wasn't that. There were, Dan and I, after we got all the autographs, we went out to the main hall, like actually through the ticketing area, and just where we were going to maybe get in a line for one of the panels.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so many people just coming in and out. I mean, it was I've never seen anywhere that I've ever been. I've been to Disney and big theme parks and all that kind of stuff. I've never seen such a steady line of traffic going in and out. Usually you catch a break at some point where there's just like, you know, even if it's for like 5 seconds where there's nobody coming by. No.
Mm-hmm.
We were probably out there for 20 minutes or something, sitting down on a bench or whatever. And it was just constant, people just in and out the whole time. You know, it was pretty nuts.
Well, and then that was the other thing is like the panels were in like one of the big, like they have like a little, I don't want to say amphitheater is the wrong term, but like a theater there inside the dome.
And it seats, it's 60 floors.
Yeah, and it seats, you know, was it 1,400 people? Was that what they said?
Something like that.
Yeah. So it's like, then that thing was full for almost every panel that they had in there.
Yep. The only reason I even got to see the Bruce Campbell panel is because I was on the VIP thing.
Yeah.
But it was very entertaining. But him and Ted Raimi did a show in there together, and they had a, where you had to entertain them, basically. They had a panel that where you just could not answer. There was no right answer to any question they were asking you. They were just breaking your balls, and everybody was having a pretty good time. The Serenity panel was good. The Karen Gillan panel was pretty good. You know, I'd have to say overall, it was like they were all pretty entertaining. I wish I would have gotten to see more of them, but I spent probably 4 hours on Saturday. Most of it from like about 11 until 2:30, 3 o'clock in the hall trying to get autographs.
Autographs, yeah. No, yeah, and I was in this, but I will say that another, you know, in the good column was they were simulcasting all the panels that were in the Ferrara Theater out into that registration area. They had it projected onto a big giant screen and a sound system. So even if you couldn't get in, or like me, there was a couple times where it's like, I could have gotten in, but I'm like, I'm not fighting the crowd and crowded into the seats. And it was just nice to have someplace a little more open that you could just sit and watch the panels or just catch a little bit as you were walking by doing your other stuff.
Yeah, it was like I said, it was a well worth it.
Mm-hmm. It was
adventure, and I'm actually kind of hoping there's less people that I want autographs for next year. That was a lot of time, and I really would have liked to have been able to sit down on a few more panels. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I'd have to say the experience was really good. So
well, this is one of the things, you know, just to, you know, I'll say is like, you know, we were talking about in the podcast before Comic-Con that, you know, we were hopeful that St. Louis was still going to be small enough you could do a couple of different things, and I think this year we realized it's like you were either getting autographs or you were going to panels or you were getting art. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like there was very little time to cross over and do different things.
Yeah, I did get a nice piece of art while I was there. I got a couple of pieces. There was a gentleman there that did some Ninja Turtles that I thought was really cool. But then James Obar, the creator of The Crow, was there, and I picked up a print from him, and he autographed it, which was
awesome.
A complete surprise. That was something that was – I didn't even know he was there. I'd gone through the artist list a dozen times. I went through the artist hall half a dozen times while I was there, and it was Sunday. I was looking for you, mm-hmm. and I came across him, and I was like, holy shit. So I really loved the Crow graphic novel and, you know, all that stuff. So it was really cool to meet him.
Cool. So,
yep, that was a little bonus onto my weekend there. But awesome. I think that's pretty much all I got to say about Comic-Con.
Cool.
You got anything else?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay. Let's see. We can move on to some movie news, cool. I guess.
Let's do it.
They did announce the new cast for Star Wars.
Yay!
The only one who is not a returning cast member that I recognized was Andy Serkis.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if he's going to be a CG character or if he's actually going to be somebody in the movie, if like he's actually going to be, you know, visible.
Okay.
He's like Mr., you know, CGI character, you know, actor right now. But so I don't think there's any clue who's out there. The thing that I did like about the casting is that I didn't know anybody. You know, I would rather know these people as the characters that they are inhabiting. You know, it's like, I think it's kind of better overall than casting a lot of faces that, you know, you already know.
Yeah, no, so. I have no problem with the new casting. I'm a little leery. Like, and this is going to be like a complete like double standard I'm having is I'm a little leery that they have brought back all the existing cast from like the, you know, right. episode 4, you know, 4 or 5 and 6. Like, I'm a little hesitant about what they're going to do with that. Now, you know, J.J. Abrams did Star Wars, and if they had told me, like, when they were doing, like, the 2009 Star Wars, oh, we're bringing back all, you know, all this cast, I'd be like, oh, that's awesome. You know, even though I do like the J.J. Abrams, Star Treks now. But it's like, for Star Wars, I'm like, ooh, I don't know about bringing back all these cast members. Like, what's the story going to be like?
Right. Well, it's In one regard, I agree, but the other regard, it's like, you know, everybody and their brother is like, oh, this happened after Jedi? Where's Luke? What happened to Han? You know, where's, mm-hmm. you know, what's Leia doing? Everybody's going to be asking those questions. And I think J.J. Abrams is the kind of guy that would, I think, hopefully allow those questions to be answered mm-hmm. without it being like a very obviously dramatic passing of the torch movie mm-hmm. in the way that, like what they tried to do with Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
I guess they were very, very much setting up Shia LaBeouf to be the next Indiana Jones or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very bad. So, you know, no, I don't think anybody wants that. I don't think they're like, oh, she's the new Princess Leia. Oh, he's mm-hmm. the new Luke Skywalker. I don't think anybody wants that. But who knows? I guess we'll have to wait till next year to find out, next December.
Yep.
So that's a big year just for the two movies because they got Avengers Age of Ultron comes out in May, and then they got Star Wars comes out in December of that year. That's a ridiculous year right there.
Big year.
Yeah. As far as this year goes, I saw the summer mm-hmm. movies, which was the new Captain America, Winter Soldier, which I think basically tops the chart of the Avengers movie characters films. I would put it above the original Iron Man and pretty much everything else that comes on the list. Okay. It was very, very well done. Characters were handled really well. You know, I say that the nitpicks were fairly minor, but overall it was pretty entertaining. And I guess well told, cool. and acted and everything. Chris Evans as Captain America is just—I think he's what really, really sells the movie. Just because he manages to keep that wholesome guy that grew up, you know, during the 30s and 40s or whatever, and you know, he always has those old values that he's wrestling with this new world, and it's pretty entertaining. And then I saw Spider-Man the other night mm-hmm. and wasn't unhappy with the movie overall, but the more and more I think about the character of Electro, the more and more I dislike him in it. It has nothing to do with Jamie Foxx, you know, playing the character or anything like that. It's the story they decided to basically tell with Electro. And if you want to, I don't want to even consider this a spoiler because it's evident from the moment you see him, you know, before he becomes Electro, he is a nerd. He is this nerdy electrician that works for Oscorp. And Spider-Man winds up saving him during, you know, as he's crossing a street during this giant car chase in the beginning of the movie. And, you know, Spider-Man gives him a compliment, says, "Hey, you're my eyes and ears, buddy," and he takes off. And so this guy is such a sad, lonely sap that he becomes completely obsessed with Spider-Man, and that he thinks him and Spider-Man are best friends, basically. And it would have maybe been okay if they'd have kind of, I think we talked about this last night when you were over for a little bit. It would have been all right if they'd have just kind of, you know, given it some time where you got to see him become obsessive, but it basically the span of like 48 hours or 2 days, he has developed this psychosis with Spider-Man where it's like they're best friends. And then when he becomes Electro, he's kind of not a villain at first. You know, he's just this guy that wakes up with these powers after this accident. And, you know, he's not meaning to hurt people, and Spider-Man has to save him, you know, or stop him from hurting people because, you know, he's not able to control what he's doing. And when Spider-Man has to take him down and doesn't remember who he is because now he's glowing blue, then he becomes, "I'm going to kill Spider-Man and take over the city," and all that. I'm like, well, why? You know, it was very weak. But as far as everything else in the movie went, it was okay. It was, you know, the storyline was pretty entertaining. The action was pretty good. But a lot of the action sequences in that movie, you can taste the CGI. I mean, it is just, it is so thick and in your face, and it looks like an Xbox cinematic, you know, from a video game or whatever. You know, it's really well done. It looks nice, but I mean, it is just, it's like, oh, this is CGI. It's like every time you see Spider-Man swinging around the city or doing anything, it's like, oh, that's CGI. Oh, he's flipping around, that's CGI. You know, there's Electro, that's CGI. It's all over the place. And, you know, it gets a little thick. But it was, like I said, overall, it was just okay.
Okay.
So I guess I've come off my high of that film a little bit, because after I got out, I was kind of like, oh, that was pretty good. And then I just started thinking more and more about it. I'm like, man, Electro was kind of stupid. But, in particular, when he shows up towards the end, he's in this black super suit. He hasn't had a super suit the entire film. And in one scene, you know, he's suddenly in a suit that's got lightning bolts on the sleeves and little like airbrushed lightning on the chest, and you're like, where did he get it? You know, it's like, did Harry Osborn have a Electro suit made up for him? Or it was weird. So I don't know. It was bizarre. Let's see. You got anything for movies, Dan?
No, I think I'm pretty clear. I'm looking at the Facebook page. I don't think either of us have posted anything movie related.
Jim and the Holograms is going to be a movie.
Yeah, great. Oh, I do have something. So apparently Matt Smith and the actress that plays Daenerys Targaryen are going to be in the next Terminator movie.
Yep, and he's apparently supposed to play a major role in it.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah. I'd love to know who he was, you know.
He's going
to
be Terminator.
We were discussing, Matt Smith is the Terminator. That I would be interested to see.
Matt Smith's going to be Terminator, and then because you were telling me that Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be in it, he's going to play, what was it, John Reese, right, yeah.
Reese.
Yeah, the day. So, yeah, it's going to be a complete change-up.
They're going to change it up. Arnold is going to be he's going to donate the sperm to make the super soldier of the future.
Well, you know, he had plenty of practice with that as the governor. So I don't know.
Gave it to the maid.
That's right. She can play Sarah Connor. Yeah.
Joe told me the other day, and I looked it up this morning, and apparently it is true that they are in the process of writing Pacific Rim 2,
Woo!
Which I know you're excited about.
It'll be whimmier.
Yeah, well, we've had our epic discussions on that.
What are they going to call it, Corey? Atlantic crevice?
The rim job is what they're going to call it. They got their contract back, and now they're looking for people to work the rim. So
okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say is if it's the rim job, does the transporter guy have to be in it? Damn it! It ruins the joke when I can't think of their name.
Jason Statham,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in your favorite movie of the summer. It's going to be Expendables 3. So.
Oh.
Excited for that.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. Now, the movie that I was not excited for, because it just sounds almost silly, was The Expendables. It's the all-female action hero.
Corey, I don't know why you think that's going to be any worse than the Expendables. It's like they're just taking the concept and putting women in it.
I know, but the thing is, the whole thing with the Expendables was like, oh, these are all the 80s action hero icons. They're all coming back, you know, and it's kind of like the old guys, whatever. Yeah. And it's because they were icons during the time. I don't recall in the 80s any female action icon, you know, of any kind. When you think about, like, 80s heroes, who?
What's her name from Aliens?
Sigourney
Weaver.
Okay. The Expendables.
Hey, you know what? Because I'm not exactly up on my 80s female action star. You know, it's not like the 80s were the golden age of female action stars, but I don't see this concept being any worse than the Expendables movie.
I'm just saying that the whole purpose of the Expendables was to bring back all these 80s action heroes, you know, Chuck Norris, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you got Van Damme, Steven Seagal, all these different people that, you know, you think back, you know, Bruce Willis, you have, you know, Mel Gibson, you could have a million of them. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But it's like you go to think about a female action hero. There's not anybody really like that, you know.
I disagree.
Okay, well, find me an 80s cast list of 80s female action stars, you know.
Well, you know what I'm gonna say is that the 80s were not exactly, you know, maybe you have to dip into the 90s a little bit.
Yeah, you could. But even then, I think you would be hard-pressed.
Yeah, I got nothing. Oh, here we go.
Pam Anderson from, you know, Barbed Wire. You can get her.
Okay, Cameron Diaz did Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, she's a major action star.
You know what? All I'm saying is that the concept isn't any worse with female actresses than it is with male actresses. It is still a money grab. See, the Expendables is not exactly about, oh, we're getting all these old action stars together. It's, oh, these guys don't work, and they just want to be in another action movie.
Yeah, and they were great.
No, they weren't.
They were 80s action movies.
Ugh. They suck.
All
right, let's just agree to disagree.
Sure, whatever.
Yeah, it's because I'm right and you're wrong, and you don't want to continue the conversation. I know.
I'm completely right.
We were completely wrong.
All right,
Corey. So did you want to drop this like gigantic news on us that you wouldn't tell me last night?
It's too big, Dan.
It's too big. Okay.
It's too big for. I mean, I don't even know if you're ready for it now.
Oh, I don't know.
You've never been ready to embrace it in the first place.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think you're ready for this. What's coming? Okay.
Okay.
Phoenix Rising is the name of the project. Okay.
Okay.
It's produced by Gary Goddard.
Okay.
And he was the creator of Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future.
Oh, my God.
The symbol of Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future, the crest that they wore on their armor and all that stuff, was the Phoenix Rising. And the show has basically what they say is a tremendous, like, cult growing faction right now. They released all the original episodes on DVD.
Wow.
That they are now in the process of They've got writers. They've done some test footage, and they are going to basically turn Captain Power into a, instead of it being a half hour format show that was supposed to be targeted at kids, to turning it into a 1 hour sci-fi show strictly aimed for an adult audience. Because I know you've never watched it, but the original series was very much always told at a mature level.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing in the show really that was like, you know, wah, 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 like, you know, like, it's not Power Rangers. It was not geared at kids. It told a story that happened in a post-apocalyptic future. There was parallel lines drawn to like Hitler Youth and Nazis and all sorts of crazy stuff. I mean, it was very, very, I want to say, groundbreaking for its time in its, especially for the audience it was trying to capture. I was like, you know, I don't know if I'd have been Hasbro making a toy company that this was the show that I was looking to, you know, to target, because it really wasn't a story. I mean, you know, it had an ongoing story about, like, you know, the resistance trying to, you know, to save humanity from the machines that were coming to basically assimilate them and, you know, put them in, you know, and make them enslaved to them. And it was, you know, it was pretty decent, you know, and had for its time, fairly decent computer generated graphics. It had like every week it had like these generated like robot like bio dreads on there. And so I'm kind of interested to see now, because I watched they had like an announcement. They had an event at some place out in California at a comic book store where they had, you know, all these people come and you could see original stuff from the show. But now they're going to basically look to be rebooting it as in an entirely new format for a new generation. And they've got like Neil Adams, who is a comic book artist. They said that he's going to possibly be working on a new comic book for the series. He was at Comic-Con St. Louis. He's a huge artist.
Okay.
So it's going to be pretty interesting. So I'm kind of interested to see what they do with it. I was going to post the videos up on our Facebook page that they had. I was going to link them from their Facebook page over, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to wait to the podcast, because I know Dan will be floored by the idea of a new Captain Power series.
Oh, I am floored, and I am filled with restless anticipation.
I can tell. You sound restless.
I do, and anticipation.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm so glad I waited 24 hours for that.
Wasn't that amazing?
It was amazing. It's the most amazing thing ever.
That was the hook that I got you to actually do the podcast. So
I know, and you hooked me all right.
Well, or I knew you would be. So.
All right. So do you want to go to your so in a turn of events? It is not. I have not discovered this week's Kickstarter. It was Corey.
That's right. I was on my Facebook page, and one of my friends, she's an artist, and she says,
"You have friends."
I do.
Oh.
And they're girls.
Ooh, that's gross.
Yeah. Grody. But anyway, she posted this thing like, you know, this is amazing. And it had this pen, and it said, draw in the air. And I was like, well, that's got my attention. And so I went and I looked at it, and there was about a 4-minute video for a Kickstarter, and it's a 3D printer pen. And essentially what they've done is they've basically made a pen-shaped hot glue gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs off a USB port. That's what you need to power it. And you thread your 3D printer plastic through the back of it, and it goes down, and you can start, you know, it'll melt it in. It starts coming out of the tip of the pen, and you can draw on a flat surface, and you can also slowly pull it up into the air, and basically, as the plastic cools and everything, you can form shapes in the air with it. You can write literally in the air with it, because it's basically just holding on to itself. And they've made some pretty outstanding art pieces with it. The one I was most impressed with, the woman was cool. They have a woman like arched on her back, which was kind of neat. But then they had one that was like this cup. It was like a spy, it had all these spiral designs in it and everything. They had one that looked like a coffee cup, which was neat. But this one was a spiral designed, almost like a blossoming type of looking object. It was pretty slick. So,
this thing looks really cool. So Corey, you've backed this, right?
I did. I backed it. If anybody's interested, they've only got like 600 spots left to get a pen before you basically have to start dropping $1,000 for one of these things. The ones that Dan and I, because Dan's backed it as well, have bid on or have put our money in for, is one where you get one of the final product pens and you get three bags of plastic with it. So, and it was, I think it was $135 roughly American, and then you have like $10 shipping on top of that. UK.
Yeah, and that's the other thing to remember is that this is a UK Kickstarter. So if you're in the United States, you're going to have to pay British pounds.
Right, which should convert over immediately.
It will. But the other thing to remember is if you're doing it on a credit card, this will probably be considered a foreign transaction. So yeah, there might be a little fee involved. But yeah, but I was looking at their Kickstarter page, and this thing's about six and a half inches long and about a half an inch wide, or in diameter. And you just use it like a pen. If anyone's ever used like technical pens before, it almost has that look, but where like the nib would be is this filament extruder, and it extrudes out basically 3D printer plastic.
Yep, and it works with two different types of plastic. I was reading about it this morning. There's like a one plastic that's a little more hard and flexible. The things you make out of it are a little more resilient, and then there's another one where it's a little less tough, and it's biodegradable, I think, the plastic, because it's made from plant matter.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'm kind of interested to see it, like, you know, because I know, like, one of the EPC, not EPC, what's the other computer place, the Jesus store that we always talk about?
Micro Center.
They sell the 3D printers down there, you were saying, and I'm sure you go down and pick up plastic down there. I'm kind of interested what that cost of that is like.
Well, and the other thing is, like, you know, this is like one of the first ones I've seen you've been able to like have a chance to get is like, but they were previewing a lot of these at SCC this year, or CES, Consumer Electronics Show. So this is like, you know, how 3D printers are just sort of on the cusp of becoming mainstream. These pins are hitting that same point too, where it's like, people are starting to get them, but not everyone has them, but they're sort of user-friendly enough that most people can use them. Yeah,
right.
It's going to be pretty exciting. Everything that makes me excited about 3D printing, I'm excited about this.
Yep. They have a lot of interesting stuff that they show in their short demo with it, including like even doing like clothing stuff.
I saw that.
Like they had this. They made all these little, pebble shaped pieces. They were all kind of like little circles, little irregular circles, and they formed a skull. And then they had this girl model it where she was wearing just kind of a blank shirt on the front, but in the back, the skull had been affixed to the back of the shirt, and the shirt had been cut out around the skull, and so it was you could see through the skull to her back. And it was pretty wild. I wonder how resilient it really is. I mean, if you were to sit down and lean back in a chair, would you completely destroy your skull?
Yeah.
Or is it flexible enough to where it would hang tough? So
I definitely think that it'd be hand wash only.
Oh yeah.
Throw that thing in the washing machine, ain't gonna make it.
No, especially if you use the biodegradable plastic.
Yeah, but I agree with everything you're saying here. This thing looks awesome.
Yeah, it's really slick. They even tell you in like the description that like some of the stuff that you see them do with it is a little sped up, you know. But yeah, they did like a little. I've seen people where they did like a little Eiffel Tower with it, and it's pretty amazing.
So, yeah, because one of the things you could do, even without drawing in 3D, is you could draw things in 2D and then make panels that you could put together in 3D. That's one of the things I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
It'll be an interesting toy to mess with. So if you're interested, I'd get out there and get one now. They're probably going to go up pretty quick. Everything below it has sold out. The next price level up does not get you a pen. It only gets you a work of art
I will say, Corey, it looks like that they've expanded. Okay, so for 82 pounds, you know, the $135 that we've been talking about, they have 608 of those left, but they've added a 92 pound, which I think is 155, will get you a pen and more bags of plastic.
Oh, okay.
So they've added a second level in there for a little bit more money that will get you more plastic and
right.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is you're not getting some weird beta version of this pen. It's the final product too. Now if you go all the way up to the $1,000, I don't know if it's quite $1,000, but the one above the artwork is fairly expensive, and you get a beta version of the pen. And you get the regular pen, so you get two pens, and then you get the plastic, and I don't know what else, their eternal gratitude and your money.
Well, exactly.
You know, but to me, that was one of those things, and it's like, I saw it, and I was like, I want it, and then Claire came home, my wife, and she's like, are you really wanting to spend money on that? And I said, just take a look, and she watched, and she goes, you have my blessing, that's awesome. You know, which for my wife, that's tall praise.
High praise, yeah. Very high
praise, yeah. So, anyway.
Cool, but I will link it into the show notes so you can find it, and I'm sure one or both of us will wind up putting it up on the page before too much longer. And the other thing, you know, is like if you pledge, you're definitely as long as this group fulfills their promise, you're getting one of these, because like they have 530,000 pounds, and they were only looking for 30,000 pounds. So,
right.
Yeah, and they have 24 days to go. So the only problem I could see now is that they have to produce too many, and that starts delaying per production. Like they almost may be cursed by their own success.
Yeah, well I know that the ones that you and I bid for are limited, and it's like. The people before us are getting theirs in September, October, and then we have to wait to December.
Yep. Yeah. Then what I was saying, like the next, there's two more after that now that are January and February dates.
Yeah. So get in while you can. I imagine that, you know, they're just going to keep increasing their order.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So. Yep. I'm pretty jazzed. I can't wait to mess with it.
Yeah, maybe when we actually get this, we can do our first video nerdy times of us messing with it.
Yep, that'll be pretty cool. You get to see us bitch and cuss
in real time.
That's right. It'll be great.
All right, Corey. So I guess I'll just kind of on the nerdy events page on the Nerdy Times. If people haven't been going to that, that's where I try to keep a list of just the different things going on in the St. Louis metropolitan area that people, you know, that listen to this podcast might be interested in. And this upcoming weekend, which would be the 8th and 9th of May, the Tivoli has the Princess Bride as part of their movie series. So if you want to catch the Princess Bride at the Tivoli and see it on the big screen, I think it's $8. And it starts at 11:55 p.m. So it'll be Friday night, and then Saturday night at 11:55 p.m. you can go see The Princess Bride. And then next weekend, the 15th or the 17th and the 18th, this actually starts the 15th, is Geekway to the West, which is sort of a medium-sized gaming convention in the St. Louis area. And one of the cool things about that is if you register, you are guaranteed a game. Like when you go to pick up your badge, you will get a free game. And it's like they have some really, really awesome games in their games list.
Yeah, and every game that you play at Geekway to the West, it's like
you have a chance to win.
Yeah, there's a chance to win it. It's like, I guess there's a random raffle or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it works, but yeah, it's pretty interesting.
So Tina, the associate intern producer Tina, maybe like, and I will definitely be going to this. Although we probably won't be going very long, Friday and Saturday, because we're, you know, we need to work. So, yeah. But we'll definitely be there at least, you know, Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
So yeah. So I think that's
sounds pretty interesting.
Yep, should be cool.
And let's see. As far as movies go, 2 weeks from now is the weekend Godzilla comes out.
Woo, Godzilla.
Looks really well done. And then after that is the X-Men Days of Future Past, uh-huh. which I saw a much longer trailer for. Uh-huh. And it's the first trailer that I saw for it that looked really, really interesting. Most of the trailers I've seen up until this point, they were very, very minimalist. And while they were, you know, it looked okay, it didn't look so enticing that I was like, God, I gotta rush out and see that, you know. But this new one was pretty epic looking. And they're going to go straight from this to Age of Apocalypse. So, yeah, which was another big storyline. And the weird thing is, it's like when you go to see Spider-Man, they have the after the credits scene, like, you know, most of the Marvel's movies do. So you're getting about halfway through the credits, and then all of a sudden the scene pops up, and it's nothing to do with Spider-Man. It is a scene from X-Men Days of Future Past where Mystique is saving all these people, like these prisoners. And then it just ends. And it's like, did we just watch a commercial for another movie?
I didn't think you did.
You know, I was like, that was really strange. And so then we turned to the usher, and we're like, is there anything after the credits for Spider-Man? And they're like, no, that was it. And I'm like, well, okay. You know, it was just kind of bizarre. They just kind of wedged this X-Men commercial in the middle of Spider-Man. So, we're not in the middle of Spider-Man, but yeah, it was kind of weird.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah. That'd be interesting if they'd have kind of linked the two together, you know, where it's like Spider-Man somehow showed up in the X-Men universe. That'd have been pretty epic. But, no, just let's just throw this commercial in after, like, in the middle of the ending credits. We'll just do that.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
All right, Corey, do we have anything else we've been meaning to talk about?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
I think we've hit all the hype. Oh, where is one thing? There was an idea posed by me to my fellow Nerdy Timesians.
Oh.
Yeah, that we should shoot for doing the world's longest podcast.
Uh-huh.
Go for the world record. Well, Dan sends me a text going, you're going to be mad. I'm like, why? And friends of the show, what was the name of that other podcast?
Tower of Technobabble.
Those guys we met in Louisville mm-hmm. are now going for it.
Yeah. Well, it's because they do not value their sanity. It's like the Guinness World Record guy told you that we could go insane after 36 hours.
Yeah. Dan, it's you could hallucinate after 36 hours.
Yeah, I don't want to do that either.
Okay, but the thing is, could it make our show any worse? Okay, I mean that could have been us, Dan.
It could have been. I'm still, you know. Okay, Corey, I will make you a deal. If they somehow do not succeed,
okay,
we will try it next.
All right. And if they succeed, then we should throw the gauntlet down and say, no, that was our idea first. We know you listened to the show.
Yeah.
Now, we're taking it back.
Oh, taking it back, are we?
That's right. Yeah. We're going to throw down and do it. And then it can be this long...
running feud.
World record grudge match between the two shows.
Corey, I prefer to do all my hallucinations after a full night's sleep. I prefer not to hallucinate, you know, being sleep deprived.
Well, Dan, see, there's nothing in the Guinness Book of World Records that said we have to be talking the whole time.
We could just snore.
We just have to be broadcasting.
Okay. You
know? So, You go take a nap, then Joe and I'll talk, and then you come back, and then one of us will all go take a nap. Joe, I think, would shoot to stay awake the whole time as much as he could.
He doesn't value his sanity.
He's never had it, Dan. So
well, I know. I guess you can't value what you didn't have.
So, you know, I think it'd be great.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
So when are they supposed to be doing this world record?
Soonish. I don't think they've actually. Oh no, they're going to do it over Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
So I will put that back on the side of the page because I think I shared it first because they were looking for witnesses, people that would be on the live stream and could, you know, confirm with Guinness that they had actually done this thing.
Yeah, because I think the world record is something at near 56 or 58 hours or something like that, which is, 48 would be two solid days plus another 8 hours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can go longer than 72 hours without sleep before you just pass out from exhaustion. So, if we started on a Friday, we would totally own it, Dan. I don't know what you're worried about.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
We'll see.
All right. We have to do it until we literally all pass out at the microphone. And they have to wake us up, and then we'll hit end, and that'll be the podcast.
Okay. All right. So do we have anything else we want to say to our adoring public this week?
Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
Uh-huh. All right, Corey. Why don't we end this?
Okay. Go ahead. End it.
Okay. Goodbye. if you would like to reach us, you can send us an email at info@thenerdytimes.com. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdytimes. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/thenerdytimes. And you can find us on our website at nerdytimes.com. And if you have a chance, please write us a glowing positive review on iTunes.
Sounds like a great idea.
Was that good?
That was amazing.
All right. All right, everyone. May the fourth be with you.
Yeah, you've done that without hallucinating. I'm very proud of you.
It was really hard.
I know. All right. Everybody out there, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye. Happy Star Wars Day. All right.